Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a very special Thanksgiving episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here today, as always, with Chris.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest for this episode. It's Mike from the It Slays podcast.
Hi, happy to be here. How's everyone doing?
Doing good. We are here today to review Eli Roth's Thanksgiving. There could not be a more appropriate movie to watch, review, and discuss on Thanksgiving Day. And we figured since it's American Thanksgiving today, we'd have our Canadian friend Mike on the show so that we could compare differences in our holiday practices.
We need an unbiased perspective.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we need to get the other side of the story on Thanksgiving.
I'm very biased, but we'll try.
So, I mean, like, we'll do horror catch-up, but I'm already curious about this, like, right off the bat. So, I mean, Canadian Thanksgiving, is it also rooted in the same kind of, like, colonial fetishism that American Thanksgiving is? I know nothing about the tradition behind Canadian Thanksgiving.
I mean, I feel like it's an offshoot of it. So, well, I mean, like, let's face it, just like America, pretty much every holiday or celebration in Canada is also rooted in colonialism.
Yeah.
So, that's a bummer, you know. But it's just, I feel like it's the same, yet we just don't give a shit about it.
Oh, so it's not like a big deal.
Like, true, yeah, because truly, like, people will, like, okay, so it always happens on a Sunday, we get Monday off. I mean, I don't, because I don't get holidays, but that's fine. Nobody gives a shit. Everybody eats their dinner on Sunday. We have Black Friday the week before, only because, you know, retail has to compete with the States. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, literally, it just kind of happens. Everybody has their day where they're rolling around, you know, digesting on Monday, and that's it.
So there's still gluttony. Is turkey part of
it? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So not too
different. It's very considered. Much dollar store American Thanksgiving.
Okay.
But it happens in October.
Yeah.
Is it the same, like, story of Thanksgiving? Like, oh, you had settlers, and they had an amazing meal with the indigenous people, and we...
Not really.
Experiences and foods.
Honestly, I feel like growing up, it was just like, you know, oh, learn to give thanks and be grateful. And there was never like this kind of lore. We didn't really have Thanksgiving lore. I guess because if they did, then they'd have to acknowledge the like genocidal, you know, slaughter of indigenous people.
I was thinking about that as we were about to do this episode because... I was like, I don't know if I could even tell you the story of Thanksgiving as it is in legend off the top of my head right now. And I certainly couldn't tell you how it connects to the idea of giving thanks. I don't know how those two things are related.
Well, I mean, it's like this mythologization of the first contact between the pilgrims and indigenous people, right? I mean, the idea is like they came together and shared food and all sat down around the table. Although I'm not sure exactly how that connects to thanks, but yeah, that's the myth is that everybody had this cute little dinner together.
Well, they were thankful to be here. And yeah. I don't know if they had did they even have a dinner together? I assume it's not wholesale.
I mean, that's the mythology. I
mean, obviously, the story of for the contact between the peoples is a lot more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just feel like it's sort of a reiteration of breaking bread.
Well, let's break some bread over. Well, I guess horror ketchup, right?
Yeah, horror ketchup time it is. So, I mean, depending on how recently we've watched like new releases or whatever, this might seem a little delayed because we're recording this earlier in the month before Thanksgiving. But what have you guys been watching or reading or enjoying in the horror world lately? How about, you know, Mike, do you want to go first since you're our guest today?
Okay, so it's funny, actually, you guys caught me on a good week, because for the last few weeks, I've been on, like, a stress and anxiety spiral, and have found it very hard to, like, concentrate on watching movies, but that is over now, and I've actually been like watching things. I've been trying to catch up on like a month's worth. Like I missed all of October, which sucked because, you know, as horror fans, October is like your month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, on our show, we did Nightmare on Elm Street 3, which I have seen hundreds of times. It's literally probably my top three movies of all time.
Banger.
Like superb, absolute banger. I mean, you know, they're all bangers, but like 3 is particularly, you know, like I feel like most people with taste consider it the apex, but I'm biased. Today, actually, I watched Revenge.
I'll jump in because I watched that for the first time since the last time I was on the show as well.
Yeah. And it was because you saw The Substance, right?
Right.
Yeah. Me too. I was like, what am I going to watch? I got a few hours. Like,
it never sounded interesting to me. And then I saw The Substance and I said, give me some more of what that director is cooking.
Hook it up. Speaking like Thanksgiving. Just right into the
I want seconds. I want seconds.
Yeah, so I watched that earlier, actually. I had a little bit of time between when I got home from work and now. So I was like, fuck it, I'm putting it on. I really enjoyed it. Was it the same magnitude as The Substance? No. But it was still a banger. You know, rape revenge films are always like a bit squirmy and, you know, make you feel icky and gross. And I think she did that.
I realized that I really haven't watched many, if any, films of that genre because I read a bunch of takes about, oh, no, the thing about revenge is how it subverts the genre. And I was like, I don't know. I can't speak to that.
I'm not an expert, but like all the ones I've seen, it just sort of seems like a really flashy, stylistic take on it. So I don't know. I'm open to like reading on it, but I don't know. I thought it was like, you know, kind of a great precursor. You could see her kind of like working with the materials that she would turn into The Substance, which I appreciated.
Yeah. It shares some DNA. In more ways than one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really want to catch up to that too. I missed it when it was out originally, despite all the hype. And I loved The Substance. So I really need to finally catch up to that.
Yeah, it's very like aesthetically pleasing, just for something that has absolutely like horrific substance, shall we say. Mm-hmm. It's really flashy and kind of candy like, which I loved. So I watched that today, enjoyed it. I watched, actually, Chris knows this because he commented on my Letterboxd review, Body Double by Brian De Palma.
Ooh, which
I would love for you to get in a Brian De Palma like era right now. I'm just saying, you need to see it. 4K is like mind blowing.
You're a huge De Palma stan, right, Mike?
Oh yeah, big time. I like to the point where, you know, I'll get in fights over it.
Well, maybe I don't want to participate. Maybe I don't want to watch.
Oh, please!
Maybe I don't want to have takes.
Actually, yesterday, speaking of New York, we were talking before we started recording. I watched a wonderful Italian take on New York, which was Fulci's New York Ripper, which I hadn't seen since I was a teenager, and I remembered thinking that it was awful. And now, after like so many years rewatching it, I actually think it's brilliant and one of his best. Like, I love a good grimy, scuzzy, like grindhouse, dirty fucking New York movie. And that's what this was. Just, you know, like pure guts and like, it doesn't make sense. No. Does it have a plot? Barely. Could I take my eyes off of it? Absolutely not. And the last thing I'll mention is I rewatched for the first time in eons Cronenberg's Crash.
Oh.
I just had this itch. I've been in like a Cronenberg place lately, and A+, I still think it's one of his best. The cast is out of this world, like just incredible. I love the book, love J.G. Ballard. Honestly, that's pretty much all I've been consuming. What about you guys?
I've been watching some of the Child's Play movies.
Because
I think I'd only really seen the original and Cult of Chucky, which we watched for the show. So I watched, but I have them all on Blu-ray. So I watched Child's Play 2, which was pretty good. It was from the director of Man's Best Friend.
Mm-hmm. Great Ally Sheedy movie.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
That's what I like to hear when I mention Man's Best Friend. I would call it a Lance Henriksen movie.
Oh, excuse me.
Chris, I don't know if you heard this episode, Mike, but Chris introduced me to Man's Best Friend actually right after an Amon recording session a couple months ago, and I had a great fucking time with it. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Maybe Lance Henriksen is the draw, but...
And it's better than Child's Play 2. Child's Play 2 did not have the heart that Man's Best Friend has, other than that, pretty similar movies. Child's Play 3, now this is my first experience. I'm sure people in the community know about Child's Play 3. I was shocked at what a misfire that thing
was.
Oh,
yeah, it's a mess.
Oh, my God. It's just conceptually. I mean, start with the concept where they're like, okay, we're gonna fast forward 10 years. We're going to recast Andy with someone who has way less charisma and it was way less interesting than Andy, even though Andy's only ever been like an 8-year-old. We're going to set the whole thing at a military academy. And the decisions just get worse from there. Oh my, what a drawl movie. But I hear that Bride of Chucky is fantastic and I'm looking forward to that. So
Oh my God,
that's where I am.
Honestly, 3 is like the only really bad spot in that franchise. Like there's at least a little bit of something to recommend all the other, 6, I think, movies, yeah. Which surprised me when I did my watch through a little while ago, because I figured there would be a way lower like hit to miss ratio. But yeah, 3 is the low point. As far as I'm concerned.
And once you hit Bride of Chucky, it kind of like takes a little bit of a turn.
Yeah.
In a different direction, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning to watch the rest, Chris?
Yeah, I'm planning to watch the rest. Yeah. And I like Chucky, and he's funny. I don't like his killer antics as much as just when he's talking shit. And I like when he has to pretend he's a doll or other people treat him like it. The best part of Child's Play 3 is when there's like a kid playing with Chucky and one of the military guys comes in and is like, there's no dolls on this base. And he just picks up Chucky and walks out of the room and like on his way out accidentally bumps Chucky's head into the door frame of the room. Like that stuff makes me laugh and smile every time. But yeah. How about you, Patrick? What have you been consuming?
I went to see Heretic today. Did anybody get a chance to see that yet?
No, I think I'm probably going to catch it while it's in theaters.
But, yeah. It was mostly good. I mean, Hugh Grant is the reason to go. He knows he's got a lot of fun material to work with and he plays the hell out of it. Where it failed a little bit for me was it's trying to do some kind of like theological commentary, spiritual kind of exploration, kind of examining and questioning the nature of faith. And it kind of just drops that in the end of the movie to kind of just throw up its hands like, who knows, you know? And so I don't know. It's kind of a weird case where I almost wish they hadn't gone in that direction, and yet Hugh Grant has so many just monologues about the nature of religion and faith that also I don't know that you'd even have a movie without that. So, I don't know. Entertaining overall, just felt a little low on the substance that it seemed to be aiming for by the end. So, I don't know. It's a weird case. I'm interested to hear both your thoughts on it when you get to it. Oh, I also recently caught up to Agatha All Along because that went through a couple different titles over its development process. And I've gotten super burned out on MCU shit over the last couple years. It's all gone a little sideways. But super fun show. Very, just fun Halloween kind of energy to it. Some good emotional moments. A fun cast of characters that I enjoyed. It's not as heavy or as emotional as WandaVision was in the end, but it's a fun follow-up to that, and it vastly exceeded my expectations. Even just for the fact that it does mostly stand alone, at least by MCU standards. Like it's just a fun, weird thing that exists without having to know much of anything else except the 9 episodes of WandaVision, which I guess is still considerable prereq. But yeah, it was fun.
I only made it through like 3 episodes of WandaVision.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, let's move on to the main course for today, which is, of course,
Thanksgiving.
Eli Roth's
Thanksgiving,
which came out in 2023. And this is a rather delayed feature film adaptation, of course, of the trailer that Eli Roth did for the Grindhouse double feature back in 2007, which I didn't even realize that Hobo with a Shotgun came out of Grindhouse as well. But
yes, local Atlanta Canadian representation.
Yeah, yeah.
But there have now been, it's just sort of insane that that movie that fucking flopped, Grindhouse, spawned three actual additional features based on the fake trailers within the movie.
And like, if you look at Machete was arguably way more successful than actually either of the features in Grindhouse, which is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And those movies are fun, actually. I like Machete. I love Grindhouse. Machete Kills, yeah. Oh, yeah, Grindhouse itself was also fun.
Oh, yes, Machete. I love all the, anything that came from those trailers. Superb.
Yeah. Chris, did you see Grindhouse or any of the other spinoffs?
Oh, yeah, I saw Grindhouse. I own Machete on Blu-ray,
but
I have not watched it yet. I bought it like when it came out on Blu-ray. I haven't watched it yet. It's been sitting on my shelf for 13 years or something.
Do you still have the shrink wrap on it?
I don't.
Okay. No. At least you opened it up.
Put it in an auction. Yeah. But yeah, I did not know this came from that, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this does I would say, a fairly admirable job of playing out and paying off the different sort of plot points, the basic concept, and a bunch of the individual scenes that are depicted in the original trailer, which I'm sure was not really put together with a particular narrative in mind. But this does a nice job of kind of grafting those moments from the Grindhouse trailer into a feature. But the basic premise here is there's a big riot on Black Friday at a kind of big box type of store called Rite Mart in the town of Plymouth, Massachusetts. This riot is ostensibly started by a group of teenagers. One of them is the daughter of the owner of the store, who kind of reluctantly is peer pressured into letting her friends in a little bit early while this group of people are just swarming outside the fucking store waiting to get in. People outside get pissed and break down the doors, and there's a fucking feeding frenzy for Black Friday shit in which a bunch of people are killed, maimed, injured, etc. And then the following year, a mysterious killer starts stalking the town of Plymouth, tracking down both folks who participated in the riot and behaved in particularly unsavory ways, as well as this group of teens. But before we get into kind of more of the plot specifics, I kind of want to just start with that opening, because it's one of my favorite things about the fucking movie, this Black Friday sequence.
It is wild.
Well, even before we get to the store, I was enjoying, because it opens on a Thanksgiving dinner scene where you meet a whole lot of characters. And
there are a whole lot of characters in this fucking movie.
There are a whole lot of characters, but each of those characters gets like 10 or 15 seconds or a glance or something that kind of just tells you what you need to know about these characters, what their relationships are, how they feel about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that, where it's just kind of moving at a clip and you instantly know who's got a crush on who and who's mad at who and that kind of stuff. And then they're like, all right, let's all go to the store.
Well, I mean,
store sequences, sensational.
Yeah, I mean, even to go back even further than that, I guess, like, even the opening shot of the film itself is so much fun, because, like, the Thanksgiving trailer, I mean, the original concept behind the Thanksgiving trailer was a Halloween knockoff, obviously. And, you get that sort of killer POV shot in the trailer, and the movie opens with what appears to be a killer POV shot lurking up to this house. And then it turns out to be the friendly town sheriff stopping by for dinner. But that's a very fun little moment as well before we get to this riot at the store.
Oh, yeah. Purely based on the original trailer, which, of course, I rewatched right before watching the feature. I was like, literally, okay, this is going to open with such a bloodbath. I just assumed like grandma was getting murdered and like it was just going to be like blood splattered everywhere. And, you know, to my shock, it was a Black Friday stampede instead. Mm-hmm. So well done, Eli Roth. Like, just pulled the rug right out from under me.
Well, and like the stampede feels so, I don't know, like, I guess I hesitate to say topical, but it feels so not that far removed from like shit that has actually happened on Black Fridays, or even the fucking Onion headline that they trot out every year on Black Friday about the like the death toll for Black Friday each year.
I mean, aren't there Black Friday fatalities like every year?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if it's anything quite on the scale of what we see here, but yeah, people have definitely been seriously injured, if not killed, on Black Friday.
So no one's been scalped by a shopping cart?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, okay, listen, I feel like now, I don't know if it's like, I assume it's like this in the States, but now we, you know, when we started celebrating Black Friday, celebrating, I say in quotation marks, because it's just horrific, you know, consumer bullshit. Yeah. But once we sort of like decided we were also doing Black Friday, after about 2 years, it became a full week. Every sale that's on essentially starts on Monday.
Yep.
So really, like, I feel like we've avoided that in a way by diluting it over the course of 5 days, seven days.
Yeah, well, and fucking here, it was the same thing where it starts, you know, Thanksgiving obviously is Thursday. It starts, you know, I would say the sales definitely start Monday. But then we also have this, like, what are all the other ones that are kind of spun off? There's, like, Local Saturday or something now where you're
supposed
to buy.
Small Business Saturday. I know that's your favorite, Patrick.
Small Business Saturday. That's right.
Do you guys have Cyber Monday, too?
Yep.
Cyber Monday, which I was upset to find out that's about shopping and not about cybering.
Oh, my God.
And then Giving Tuesday. So, I mean, honestly, at this point, like, it really does last for over a week.
The Giving Tuesday, my favorite. I never miss Giving Tuesday.
I feel like every day is both cyber and giving for you, Chris.
Sure.
But anyways, we have this this very sensational sequence that I enjoyed very much. The tension of it builds really nicely as people are increasingly losing their minds more and more outside the store. These teens are inside the store taunting them, and then there's just this sort of orgy of violence that is horrifying, but also, you know, certainly darkly funny, like the entire movie. And to me, I guess this is where I'll start talking a little bit about Eli's presence here. We've reviewed an Eli Roth movie or two on the show in the past, and if you're a longtime listener, you know I'm not much of a fan of this dude. But this movie is kind of where he dials it in for me and maybe reins in a little bit of the, like, juvenile instincts just enough. He certainly doesn't eliminate them in this movie, but it's reined in just enough where I can take him a little more seriously and not just be kind of like disgusted with his antics. How do we feel about Eli Roth in general? I know you're a fan, Chris.
Am I on record saying I'm a fan?
I don't know. You've been quite defensive of him in the past. Let's put it that way.
I don't remember. Overall, I have a dim view of Eli Roth. And man, so much of it hangs on a certain joke from Cabin Fever that I don't think he's lived down yet.
Fuck, I forgot about that.
And the kind of joke where, like, I can't watch this movie and not read, like, additional racist jokes in it. Just because I'm still got him under the spotlight for the Cabin Fever thing. But that's neither here nor there. He can be juvenile. I'm trying to remember a review of Hostel, because I thought Hostel was for the most part good, but I do feel like he undercut himself in a juvenile way at some parts of it, but I forget what those were. But this, I think, benefits from being a sillier movie on the whole. It's a horror comedy, I think, in a way that his other movies aren't, except Cabin Fever, sort of. But this is more lighthearted than Cabin Fever. And so I think that he can play around more and it's less jarring. Whereas if some of these gags and some of these jokes had been in a more serious movie, you'd be like, oh, look at that. Look at that edgelord. Look at that.
Okay. I feel like I have a spotty history with him as well. Like, I remember liking Hostel and Hostel 2, but also going, like, I don't really know if I ever want to watch these movies again. And Cabin Fever, I don't remember this awful joke because it's been
That's 15 good. Years That's since I've best. Seen it.
So I'm maybe I'm going to, like, pause on the rewatch of that. But I feel like maybe what makes this a little bit more palatable to me is that the humor and stuff in it, because it's so over the top, it's just like a little sprinkle of like camp. It's like kind of a little bit campy because it's like more of a parody, or it's kind of started as a parody in the germ of the trailer. Maybe I'm misreading that, but to me it just seemed like a touch of camp, and that's what made it like a little bit less juvenile.
And yet it still works well as a slasher overall, I think. And I think it, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the slasher genre, but I think it kind of works as almost a fun love letter to slashers in general, because you've got obviously a huge debt to Halloween and huge love that you can tell he has for Halloween. It's got some Scream energy with a central mystery around who is this killer, and there's a million red herrings about who the killer is. And even another Amon past review, I Know What You Did Last Summer, because these kids are sort of haunted by someone who knows their role in contributing to, if not directly inciting, this riot, and is slowly, you know, preparing their place at his evil Thanksgiving dinner table that he keeps tagging them in photos of on fucking Instagram.
Yeah, this movie reminded me of I Know What You Did Last Summer probably more than any other slasher movie. And just set around the holiday, it's fun. I was thinking of also of it's not like this movie, but I was thinking of My Bloody Valentine, just because that's another like
I was getting My Bloody Valentine from it too.
But unlike My Bloody Valentine, this movie does a very good job of being about Thanksgiving. Like, you can watch this every year at Thanksgiving, where, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen My Bloody Valentine, but we're like, the killer in that's a coal miner, right? It's not it's not like a guy dressed as Cupid or anything.
Wait, actually, that reminds me, Chris, have you seen the trailer for Heart Eyes?
No.
Oh, okay. That might be the Valentine's Day themed slasher that you're looking for. I saw a trailer for it today with Heretic, and I was like, this looks fucking ridiculous.
Interesting.
And very Valentine's themed.
I'm not the biggest fan of slashers either, and I think where slashers live and die is what happens between the slashings. The quality of the slashings, and then what happens between them,
and who's fucking being slashed, and if you fucking feel like you know who they are, if they're just, you know, I mean, we talked about this on the Jaws episode, like, if it just feels like this anonymous group of cannon fodder characters or not,
right? And I'm kind of torn in this one, because, like I said, they do a pretty good job of characterizing much of the extremely large cast. And then there's other characters that you don't really know a lot about. But more importantly for me, the characters aren't really doing anything interesting or having any interesting dramas between themselves. Like, there's a little bit of drama with our main heroine, whose name I can't remember.
Jessica,
and her ex-boyfriend Billy, who is, you know, a red herring, possibly the killer, because he was an all-star pitcher in high school, but his arm was crushed in the Black Friday massacre, and he disappeared and hasn't been heard from again, but now he's back in town just as the killings start. And then her other, like, finance bro boyfriend that she is dating now. And so there's, like, you know, a love triangle thing going on that's, like, kind of interesting, especially because both boyfriends are potential killers. But outside of that, it's like there's so many characters in this. And while you know, might know who, like, what their job is or who they're related to, the characters don't have a lot to do when they're not being killed, other than being like, did you see so-and-so got killed? Oh my God, what if we're next? And so that was kind of uninteresting for me.
Yeah, I feel that. I would give this, like, I think an above average grade on the slasher curve, I guess, for creating characters that felt distinct and that I found interesting, if not cared about. But, you know, I'm not going to be thinking about any of the... I've seen this movie twice now, and I certainly have not spent any time thinking about any of the characters after watching it either time.
Yeah, I feel like they're not doing anything interesting, but I found the actors to be, like, charming and engaging, so that kind of, like, kept me a little bit more hooked than I would be.
Mm-hmm.
But, and like, Addison Rae is in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So I was just like, okay, listen, I can get on board with this. But, yeah, Chris, I totally... They're not really given a whole lot to do.
Yeah, there are, like, a few kind of notable actors sprinkled in here. Addison Rae, yeah. Or just bizarre kind of choices, yes, sprinkled in here. Addison Rae, Gina Gershon, and, of course, Patrick Dempsey is kind of the biggest name in the movie.
I thought that one guy, the guy who sells guns and drugs, I had to stop and look it up.
Did you think it was Winston?
No, I thought it was Max Landis.
Oh, I don't know what Max Landis looks like.
Looks just like him. And I was like, oh my God, did they put Max Landis in this film? No, they didn't. He's a guy with like two other credits, but he happens to look a lot like Max Landis.
But that is the sort of role that you would... I'm actually kind of surprised that they didn't get some kind of, like, random niche, like, Rob Zombie-style stunt casting in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also for a movie that, like, is the first scenes of Black Friday Massacre, right? And, like, the drama, besides the slasher, the main drama in the movie is our hero's dad is, like, going forward with another Black Friday amidst community protests that he hasn't been held accountable for the last Black Friday where a bunch of people died in his store. But there's not really any interesting conversation about that or commentary or I don't know. Like, again, maybe I just wish this were like a political film, which it's not.
That's what you wish every film was.
Right.
That's nothing new.
It leaves me wanting when in between the killer scenes we have dialogue about that sort of thing, but it has no substance to it. I'm like, would it kill you to have, I don't know, maybe our hero Jessica has like really strong feelings about this that are at odds with her dad. And I mean, there's a little bit of that, but I don't know. I want more. I want some more interpersonal conflict.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know how much more politics of Black Friday you could work into this, but I did find it funny. I mean, kind of on the note of the protests against the following Black Friday sale, the protesters walking around the background of one shot that one of the protesters has a sign that says Reichmart, like Third Reich, yeah, instead of Reichmart. That was a funny little sight gag to me. But Chris, I liked what you mentioned about how this kind of, you know, in comparison to My Bloody Valentine, really feels like it leans on the tropes of the holiday itself. And I don't think you could do better, honestly, than what it does with this. Like, you got, of course, again, the Black Friday riot that we've talked about. You've got a killer dressed up as John Carver in pilgrim garb with this creepy mask, killing people with an axe. You've got a big scene set in the Thanksgiving parade. I think they make very good use of the holiday and its tropes.
Yeah. And that counts for a lot. And there's no one else. Well, there are other Thanksgiving horror movies. I haven't seen them, but I know you've seen
them. Oh, yeah. What's the fucking That's Not Cranberry Sauce movie? Oh, Blood Rage. That's what it is.
Oh, Blood Rage. Oh, yeah. That's a deep cut.
Yeah. That's a classic. Man, I don't know what else to say about this before going to the spoiler room, because I kind of want to talk about like kills or whatever, but that seems better suited to the spoiler room, and obviously we don't want to really get into like who the killer is, all that shit. But do you guys have any other thoughts that seem appropriate for pre-spoiler room?
I thought this movie was well directed. Good job, Eli Roth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean,
especially because there's a lot of terrible slashers out there,
mm-hmm,
a lot of bad slashers out there, and this, I didn't love it maybe, but it was a damn fine slasher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, well, I am a slasher lover, and I totally 100% agree with you. There are an awful lot of awful slashers.
Yeah. Well, and it like summons the, I don't know. I mean, it's not set in the Midwest, but it had that like chilly Midwest fall, like gross gray sky kind of vibe to it. Like it summoned that energy very well. It felt like Thanksgiving. Like I could feel the damp chill in the air for most of this movie. So good job, Eli.
Well, Patrick, would you view it, cue it, or screw it?
I'll give it a view it. I liked it when I saw it in the theater. I had fun with it the second time. I didn't think about it for a goddamn second after I left the theater, and I would not have thought about it for a goddamn second after a second viewing if not for having to discuss it for this podcast. But it's fun. Like, I mean, it's not like something you're going to want to chew on intellectually. Like, that's not why you're here in the first place. It's fun. It does its job. It's a horror movie for the season. It feels like the fucking season. It's a good thing to watch in November after you've gone through all your Halloween movies. How about you, Chris?
I actually agree with every word you said, except I'm going to give it a cue it. And maybe my scale is getting more severe, but this isn't a movie I'm going to recommend to anybody. My bar for review it is sort of becoming like, is there anybody in my phone who I'm going to text and say, you should see this movie? And there's not for this one. It's in one eye, out the other, so to speak. And I liked it. And it's good. It does exactly what it sets out to do. But, you know, it just didn't have that extra element that's going to make me come back to it or really say, hey, you can't miss Thanksgiving. How about you, Mike?
Honestly, I'm kind of with Patrick. I'm definitely going to give it a view it. I don't think it's, you know, groundbreaking or particularly, like, good, but it was really fun. One of my bars now is, did I pause it to see how much time was left? And how many times? And I actually didn't pause it once.
That's a good metric, honestly.
It really is, because yeah. Even sometimes, like something that I'm really looking forward to, I'll be like, okay, come on now, like when can I get up and get another coffee or like take a bathroom break? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't do that once. I kind of like was going back and forth while I was watching it, because I, like I said, I love Grindhouse. I loved those trailers. That was one of my favorite ones when I first saw it. I saw it, like Grindhouse, seeing that in theaters was amazing. And it wasn't as over the top and like kind of scuzzy like I thought it was going to be. Like I thought he was really going to lean hard into the like machete hobo with a shotgun sort of
like scratched. Fake film grain.
Exactly. Yeah. Like really make it like Grindhousey. And he didn't, which sort of disappointed me, but honestly, the way that he expanded on the idea and yet still included, like you said, Patrick, like, say, 5 of the 8 banger, like, frames from that original trailer, like, you know, the trampoline and the woman on the table as, you know, Thanksgiving turkey. Like, the fact that he managed to keep all that in there and still tell a story that, instead of being set in, like, the 70s, was current? I don't know. It's going to be a regular fall movie for me, so I'm definitely giving it a view it.
This was a first-time watch for both of you, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, there you have it. Two view-its and a cue-it for Thanksgiving. This is now the point in the show where we go to the spoiler room, so we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss all the spoilers for Thanksgiving. Which, you know, one other thing I want to throw in here is the only thing that I wish they had somehow incorporated into this movie that was in the trailer is the way they say Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Like 17 different times, yes. In that trailer. It's so funny, and I wish they had done that in the movie. So I'll probably drop that in this episode at least once or twice. But before we go to the spoiler room and eat our spoiler pumpkin pie, I'll encourage you, as always, to check us out on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Nazi-owned X, as Chris calls it. At Amoncast, E-H-M-O-N. We should delete the fucking X account, honestly.
See, that's the whole premise of me saying Nazi-owned X instead of Twitter. because as soon as you put Nazi owned in front of it, you start to ask, why am I on that website?
Honestly, it's more the election that's making me feel that way, but I'm sure you contributed as well. Should we delete the fucking, should we delete that shit?
Probably.
I guess we should talk to Steven about that. We'll talk to Steven about that.
He's not going to give a shit. The only thing is there, you know, there are some people can be contacted via their Nazi-owned X account, and you can't get to them otherwise.
That's true. You know? That's true.
Is G.J. Ekterenkamp, actually, G.J. Ekterenkamp just deleted his Nazi-owned X after the election.
Oh, okay.
I saw that, so...
All right, well, I guess we'll keep our Nazi-owned X account for now. You can still find us out there at Amoncast, Ehmoncast. You can also go to our broken website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. There's a merch store link there if you want to get an Every Horror Movie on Netflix t-shirt or a coffee mug or other merchandise. And lastly, please follow us and review us on your podcast provider of choice. We love to see the feedback, and it helps people find the show. All right, you guys, full of your turkey and ready to go eat some spoiler pie?
I need it.
All right.
I need that spoiler pie.
Let's do it. We're going. We'll see you in the spoiler room. All right, we have... regathered around the table for a little spoiler pie and coffee for Thanksgiving. It's time to talk about all the spoilers from this motherfucker. I feel like one of the first things I want to talk about, I mean, it's a slasher, so I want to do the typical thing, kills. What stands out to you all? Did you have any favorites? Any that you thought were underwhelming, too much? Anything you didn't like?
Man, it kind of speaks to my perception of the movie. I just watched this movie last night, and I can barely remember the kills.
That is so funny. I have the exact opposite problem. Like, I was at work this morning, and all I could think about was Yulia getting fed into that saw.
That was a good one.
There was a couple of ones that I think I'll remember for a very long time.
I mean, honestly, also as far as like darkly funny, like holiday appropriate shit, the fact that her the violence against her commences by the killer John Carver jamming those like little, I don't even know what you call them, the little plastic picks that you put into a like a corn cob
corn holder
jams them into her ears. That was creative and funny. And then, he just throws her on a fucking buzzsaw, which was horrifying, but also extremely memorable.
Yeah, and the scalping, of course, I alluded to that earlier. I fucking love Gina Gershon. When I saw her in this, I was, like, my jaw was on the floor. Just gagged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the grocery cart scalping was probably the most... vivid and creative thing that I can recall from the movie. There was a kill I liked. I'm just trying to think of it. I'll let you know. I'll let you know if I think of it.
I mean, also the fucking, like, cooking the store owner's wife like a turkey is truly horrifying. I don't know. That was one of the ones where I appreciated the creativity, and of course it is... You know, one of the scenes that did pop up in the Grindhouse trailer. And so, you know, kudos to them for working it into the plot. But it was one that, like, I don't know. It was almost a little too much for me. I think maybe because, like, she didn't really do anything, you know? Like, a lot of the other, well, at least some of the other kills, like, these people are actually guilty of being pieces of shit. You know, like, some of the people who were beating each other up in the stampede, I'm like, okay, fine, yeah, cut that guy's fucking head off and carry the diner out in a waitress duffel bag. yeah, that's all fine. But the woman who got literally basted and then cooked in a giant oven and then trussed up and put on the fucking table at the end like a turkey was creative, and yet also I was just like, oh no.
I loved that whole scene, though. Honestly, that was probably, like, to me, one of my, like, top two or three favorite. Her whole, to me, it kind of, like, gave me a obviously more comedic version of, just because you brought up I Know What You Did Last Summer, my favorite scene in that, which is Sarah Michelle Gellar's chase scene. But it was just like, like just so fucking over the top and insane. And I don't know what it was, that woman, every time she was on the screen, I just wanted to laugh because she seemed like somebody who should, like, I don't know who she is, I've never heard of her before. She seems like somebody who should be in comedies because just her fucking facial expressions were like chef's kiss.
Yeah, she was good.
You know, I know they were trying to make her like evil, but I just wasn't buying it. They kept
saying, didn't actually do anything that evil though, did
yeah.
She did.
They no, well, I mean, they said like that they kept, the characters kept saying, you know, oh, she's encouraging him, you know, okay, she's a yeah. gold digger and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't really see it.
Oh, that's only, right. That's right.
Yeah. Only that they're saying that she's like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just kind of guilt by association exactly, with this yeah. sleazebag who runs the store. Who is wonderful, by the way. Like, what a bizarre face that guy had. And yeah. just, I don't know. I just love, cartoonish. It was a cartoonish mm-hmm. performance of a cartoonish character by a cartoonish looking man. And I appreciated that.
I think there's a lot of cartoonish looking people in this movie. Now that you mention it, I didn't really realize it because I think that's what I sort of liked about the wife because she did have almost like a Bugs Bunny, like Looney Tunes cartoon face, like a Jessica Rabbit. And I'm thinking of, well, like the girl who got fed into the Saw and even like Addison Rae and the jock guys, like they all kind of have like really like big eyes and...
Mm-hmm.
I know I keep saying it over the top. Their faces are over the top.
I'm looking at the guy who played the Right Mart owner now. Oh, he was in Hostel and Hostel 2.
Of course.
Lethal Weapon 4. And he's best known for playing Jerry Best in The Bernie Mac Show.
Oh, interesting.
So there you have it.
Good for him.
Chris, did you remember your kill? Oh, sorry.
As I'm remembering, trying to remember the kills in this movie... A couple things are happening. One is I'm remembering how much this movie is like I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
especially the part where they have their Thanksgiving parade, which is like the, you know, the prawn parade or whatever the hell they have in I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah.
And you have the heroine on the float who's looking and seeing would-be killers around every corner. It's like shot for shot.
Mm-hmm.
The ending of the movie, which we'll get to, is I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, you mean like the literal very final
scene
or shot. Yeah.
So lots of stuff. But actually, that makes... Because when I like buckled down years ago to write Pizza Face Killer, which will probably never be made because somebody ripped off my idea and made a short on YouTube with a VHS camcorder and got it. It's now I'm going to be the guy who ripped off him if I make the movie. So, but I watched I Know What You Did Last Summer as like, it was like the first movie that came into my head is like, what's a straight up the middle, like 90s slasher movie, not Scream. Cause that's sort of its own, it's trying to be subversive and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's like the quintessential 90s slasher that I can like research for, like how to write a slasher. I watched that movie for that reason. So maybe Eli Roth did the same thing. Maybe we have a hive mind. Maybe I'm about to start making constant racist and misogynist jokes.
Oh, please, please don't.
On this show, don't change that channel. But speaking of the parade has my favorite kills in it, which are when the mascot who's dressed as a turkey is just unceremoniously dispatched, has its head cut off with an axe. And then when the driver towing the
Mayflower. Final Destination shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has I forget what that's called. Load shift. I don't know. Actual semi-truck drivers die like this all the time, where the truck stops, but the load doesn't stop and crashes into the cab. And in this case, the pointy front bow of the Mayflower comes through the back window and blows his head off, essentially.
No, his head is still on. It's just there's a giant like wooden pole sticking through it. And like his nose is like hanging by a thread.
The kids are like, Daddy.
That was so disgusting and borderline unnecessary because that guy, that wasn't even a character, was it? Like, we didn't even know who that person was.
No, it showed him for 20 seconds before that.
Yeah, so gratuitous.
And they lingered on it. Like, they really lingered on that guy's face.
Yeah.
Way longer than they should have.
Highly memorable, though.
That oh, whole, yeah, that, the, I feel like there was like a sprinkling of Final Destination there. It was very much like a snowball effect of like, you know, related and unrelated carnage. Mm-hmm.
And also, doesn't the killer shoot somebody? Yeah.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
He's dressed as a clown, mm-hmm. And he and I always like it when. I mean, I don't like the Terrifier movies, but other than that, I like it when a Oh, I've only seen the first Terrifier. Maybe I'll like Terrifier 2 and Terrifier 3. We'll never know. I like it when the slasher uses a gun, like for some reason, because it like almost never happens.
Oh yeah, it's a tranquilizer gun in that moment because he's taking.
Oh, I thought there was a real gun. Is it just a tranquilizer?
He might shoot somebody before that.
I thought he used a real gun and then a tranquilizer.
Oh yeah, you might be right. The main thing I remembered was him jumping in, like shooting jumping into the police car and then shooting tranks into, I think, three of our
main characters
to take them to his fucked up Thanksgiving dinner. Although he's in a clown outfit at that point, so you don't even know it's him. Another kill that, I don't know, this is a really weird one, and I don't know, maybe there's just some context I missed or forgot, but, and this is another Grindhouse trailer scene, but the trampoline bit that Mike mentioned before. So we've got this scene where, as far as I know, two characters who, again, we have not seen and have no context for, like, there's this kind of douchebag coach in the high school football locker room, like putting people through their paces on their workouts, and then a cheerleader summons him into an empty gym and starts like taking off her clothes for him, and then the killer kills both of them. Did I forget or miss something, or was there any actual reason for John Carver to kill these two?
They were the two that were in the crowd at the beginning scene.
Oh, they were
the ones that our main kids got in like a fight with.
Right.
Yeah. And then they were arguing with the diner waitress. And
All right.
And I don't know if it matters, but I feel like maybe it should be said that in that Black Friday sequence, our heroes, if you want to call them that, like, they're not really there to participate in Black Friday. They're there, like, incidentally, because one of them broke their phone fighting this other jock. And, like, so the one girl's dad's going to let them in to get a new phone. And then once they're in there, they start egging on the crowd through the windows, partially because their rival from the other school is in the front of the crowd. And that's what creates the horrible, tragic stampede and deaths.
An interesting change in that the trampoline scene between the trailer and the movie is in the trailer, she does a fucking split and that knife goes right between her legs, which did not happen in the feature film. And I'd just be curious to hear what conversations happened behind the scenes where they're like, well, let's dial this back a little bit. We can't do this in the year 2023.
Eli's growing up.
I guess so.
He's got kids now.
That's the maturity I was talking about before, where he's matured a little bit. Like he's no longer like, let me just stick a knife right up there, you know. Instead, let's just have her. I forget where the first like strike is in the actual movie.
In her chest, like through her shoulder or something.
Yeah, and then she like bounces on the trampoline 17 times. And then she gets a bunch more stab wounds. But again, memorable. But anyways, we have this big parade that Chris has talked about that's designed to lure the killer out. And boy, does it work, I guess, because he wreaks havoc and then brings our surviving protagonist to his fucked up Thanksgiving dinner. The owner of Right Mart is there. The wife of the Right Mart owner is trussed up on the table and he's trying to fucking feed the owner's wife to him. A couple of our kid protagonists cut themselves loose, and we wind up with, man, I'm going too deep into the plot weeds on this. The killer's fucking Patrick Dempsey.
The killer is the sheriff, Patrick Dempsey.
Who was in the very first shot of the movie, which is very clever in retrospect, that we start off with what appears to be a gag, where we have this POV, we assume it's a killer shot, oh no, it's the friendly sheriff, and then we double back by the end of the movie. Because the sheriff is indeed the killer.
The sheriff is the killer because he had a crush on Gina Gershon that was established.
It was more than a crush. They had a relationship. She was going to leave her fucking husband for him. She was going to have his baby.
Listen, these days you can't trust it until you have it in your hand. So yeah, that rings on the finger, anything could happen. So he had a crush on Gina Gershon, and the scalping of her was too much for him, and so he decided he was going to kill everybody who was responsible for that scene. And you know, good for them, because there's a lot of red herring. Maybe this is the killer stuff going on in this movie. And for a movie that doesn't really have a ton of suspects that could be the killer, I didn't really suspect the sheriff until like the last moment.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't remember what my thought process was when I saw it the first time. Obviously this time I remembered it was him, but I don't remember if I had the same kind of like suspense about that. How about you, Mike?
Once they kind of got into the, you know, what was it, like a historical landmark house, wherever they were
tied up
and stuff. Mm-hmm. I kind of forgot that he existed. So when she escapes and, you know, runs into the police car and him on the road and stuff, I was like, oh, wait, it's probably him. Like, I was like, we haven't seen him in like 20 minutes. I forgot that he existed. It's 100% him. But honestly, for the rest of the movie, I was like, kind of, I don't know, distracted and entertained enough that I kept like forgetting to kind of like be paying a bit more attention to all the red herrings. And I don't know, I it kind of took me for a ride, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, and I think
simple, but
I think it helps to stunt casting Patrick Dempsey, because he's the biggest star in the movie, and you're used to him being, you know, some degree of sympathetic character in most of his popular roles. You know, he's a cutie, whatever. He's playing an agent of the law, so like, why would you suspect him? So it's fun. It's a fun twist to have Patrick Dempsey be a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he has fun with his little villain monologue explaining his motivations, and it's good. It's a fun
and,
twist.
And until that point, this is a movie, unlike, say, A Nightmare on Elm Street, this is a movie where you trust the police until the end. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no cynicism. It's like the police are here to help. They're actually reassuring you every time something horrible goes on. You're like, yeah, the police are going to keep us safe. So it's a good twist. And I didn't really see it coming. I think I caught on to it a few seconds before our hero caught on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And until that point, I thought it was Bobby, Billy, the guy who's obviously a red herring, right? You know that it's not the pitcher who broke his arm because they're trying to sell that to you so hard. But it gets to a point where I'm like, I don't know who else has the means, the motivation, and the methods, especially the way John Carver is like throwing pitchforks in the people's backs and stuff. And before the turkey woman gets put into the oven, she's hiding and she like knocks over a bag of baseballs. And like, there's all these little clues where I'm like, it's gotta be Billy Bobby, right?
Yeah. I even double killered it at one point.
Yeah.
Do you? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's Jigsaw and Hoffman.
Yeah.
But no, it's just the sheriff.
Yeah.
And I also predicted that our hero Jessica was going to have to shoot a musket by the end of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
They did Chekhov's musket.
I did not predict that she was going to load it with her fucking charm bracelet that's in honor of her mom that we've seen her kiss before bed every night. And she loads that for like buckshot, basically.
Wrote in my notes Chekhov's bracelet. I knew it as soon as she picked it up and kissed it. I was like, she is going to fuck somebody up with that thing.
And I mean, talk about making fun or creative use of Thanksgiving tropes. Like, not only the musket, like this period weapon, but also she fills a fucking Thanksgiving turkey parade balloon with flammable gas and then shoots it with the musket to fucking blow up Patrick Dempsey. I mean, it's just it's so extra and it's fun. It's fun.
There's a lot of little touches there that, especially in the like final act, that just like, it's details, man. Like, that's why I got to give this a view it, right? Like, he just paid too much attention to like everything.
Yeah. Like, you know? This is clearly a labor of love, you know? I mean, you don't make a feature length film of a fake trailer that you made 16 years ago about a Thanksgiving like murder rampage without like putting a lot of thought and just having a lot of fun with it, you know? And I think that's what he did here, and it's clear. But Chris alluded to the "I Know What You Did Last Summer" ending, and it's Jessica, our protagonist, is in bed with her, as Chris described him, finance bro boyfriend.
Because conveniently, they do not recover the body of John Carver.
So right.
Sequel is open.
Yeah.
And they say sequel or epilogue is open at this point because they're like, yeah, we didn't find him. There's just too much ash in there, but we're sure he couldn't have survived.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's like drone shot, ambulances driving away. That's your movie. Then epilogue.
Yeah. And then she hears a noise, I think, gets up, goes to her closet, turns on the light, looks in there. Everything's all good. Shuts off the light, walks back, and then flaming fucking Patrick Dempsey pops out of the closet and grabs her. And then boom, she wakes up. It was a nightmare, but he could still be out there. End of the movie. Cue fucking Danzig. And then there's a really weird post-credit scene. Did either of you see that?
No, and you know what? I don't fucking watch post-credit scenes anymore.
I didn't see that because it shrunk the screen on the service that I watched it on to show me up next. So I was like, oh, there must not be anything.
Well, it's interesting. Like, it's not even really a post-credit scene. I think it's just an outtake, but I did not understand what the purpose of it was. Like, it's just the actor who plays, what's his name? I keep forgetting his name. We just keep calling him the Right Mart owner. So I'll do that for the probably last time. But it's just him, like, doing a very long kind of weird facial expression, weird reaction shot, and then like flipping off the camera. I honestly don't even know why they chose to put that one shot at the end of the movie. But
see, that's why I don't watch post-credits scenes anymore. They're either there to sell you something or to spoil your experience. Remember The Gray? Remember the post-credits scene in The Gray? Jesus Christ.
Barely, but I remember it undercut the wonderful emotional experience that was The Gray.
Yeah, it did. If it ever snows again here, I'm going to watch The Gray.
I am way overdue for a Gray rewatch, that's for sure. I think I've only seen that once, which is a tragedy.
Okay, Mike, you ever see The Gray? Or I was going to say, it up there in Newfoundland.
I'm living it. I've never seen it. Clearly, I need to watch it. And then as soon as the credits roll, cut her off.
Yeah,
Mike, have you ever fought a wolf?
Do you have wolves up there? You got wolves in Newfoundland.
Yeah, we have everything.
Probably more wolves than people.
I mean, some of the people could be mistaken for wolves. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, man, I saw a fucking trailer like for
Forks, Washington shit you're talking about.
Yeah. I saw a trailer for Lee Whannell's The Wolfman before Heretic today, and I'm very excited about that. Other than that, they're dumping it in January. That's a bad sign.
And so I saw that trailer too, and it was like a teaser trailer.
This one was longer.
Okay. Pretty vague, but it seemed like he's going back to the well on the monster is actually domestic violence again.
I didn't pick that up, actually.
That's the vibe I got, but I'd be glad to be wrong. Yeah. Not that I think he couldn't do that well again, but it would be a little repetitive.
Huge fan of Christopher Abbott. I'm super stoked that he's in that, and that alone is a good sign. But we'll see. We'll fucking see. Well, anyways, we've polished off our meal. There are no leftovers, as the tagline for this movie promises. We're all full of tryptophan, so I think it's time to go take a little nap.
I'm not full of tryptophan because I don't eat turkey on Thanksgiving.
You should start injecting some tryptophan into your... Do you do tofurkey or do you have like a turkey replacement?
No, so I make something, I call it holiday loaf. We'll put the fucking recipe in the show
notes. I remember this, yeah.
I call it holiday loaf, but it's actually called winter vegetable and hominy hash and croot. But it's basically, I make a hash with hominy and a bunch of vegetables and wrap it up in a puff pastry.
Ooh.
And it's delicious. It's great. You'll never eat turkey again. And no one likes turkey, or they'd eat it more than once a year.
That's bullshit. I fucking love turkey. It's just a pain in the ass to cook an entire turkey, and it's expensive as fuck.
The amount of turkeys that are slaughtered every year for Thanksgiving would make your head spin. It truly is American carnage. Anyway, my vegan recipe, which is not my own, but something I stole from Bad Manners, formerly known as Bug Kitchen.
I'll put that in the show notes. Their recipes are fantastic.
They are.
All right, well, whether you had a holiday loaf or a delicious, delicious turkey, happy Thanksgiving to all y'all out there, and we'll see you next time. Mike, thank you for, you know, digging back into the Thanksgiving spirit to do this.
Oh, listen, anytime, literally anytime.
I hope you at least get some good stuff on Canadian Black Friday.
It's already gone. It already happened, dude.
Oh, I thought it was
time. Oh, no, it's time, though. Our Black Friday is literally the same time as yours.
That's interesting.
It's literally, like I said, just a dollar store version of everything American, which is a dollar store version of everything else in the world.
Wow.
I'm going to buy all the Blu-rays I can before the tariffs put into place.
Jesus. We almost made a whole episode without talking about that.
Boo.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. For every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Chris.
Have a great day. It's Mike.
And we'll see you next time.